Call to order the December 14th Mountain Regional Water Administrative Control Board meeting. Do we have any public input, or is that further on down?
It's further down.
Okay. So I guess we are on to Steve and his impact fee analysis.
So there is the full impact fee analysis that was included in the packet that Zions Public Finance prepared for us after receiving the IFFP from Mo and Collins. The impact fee analysis, or the IFA, determines the charge will be given to people who request new connections to the district. Next slide, please. So just a little bit of a background. The district imposes an impact fee for state law to mitigate the impact of new development on public infrastructure. The first step was the completion of the impact fee facilities plan, the IFFP, by Bowen and Collins. They then have to hand that off to another party to do that calculations, which was done by Zions Public Finance, and they have completed the impact fee analysis and given us what the amounts would be. Just background, the last time we did this was in 2019. Okay, go ahead. Next slide. So for the impact fee in the district, we look at two different areas. The general service area, which is basically all service areas except Promontory. And then Promontory is calculated separately because they bring their own water lease fees and developed a lot of their own infrastructure. The customers still pay an impact fee, but then we give a credit back to Promontory to offset the things they've brought to the district already. So that's why there are two different areas. There's five components that make up the impact fee: water rights, source production, storage, distribution, and operation support. The philosophy is if there's excess capacity, then the new connections have to buy into the excess capacity. So if we haven't fully used a pump or a tank or whatever, they pay in to be part of that. If there's not excess capacity in anything and we have to build new things, then they pay for that because they're causing that impact on the district. For example, the expansion of the treatment plant is really a lot because of growth. So that's that was in the impact fee facilities plan. So now it's part of the fee that they're going to charge. There's a limit, so you can only look at a 10-year window. If something is going to help you beyond 10-year window, it can still be in your plan, but you can only use what's going to help in the 10 years to calculate the fee. So new people coming today can't pay for something that will help people in 20 years. They can only look for 10 years. All right, so when they completed the calculations, it was done a little bit differently. Go ahead to the next slide. Bowen and Collins recommended, and Zions Public Finance followed through with calculating on 1 gallon per minute on peak day. What's that, the cost to the district? So for the general service area, it's almost $20,000, $19,995. They do get some credits for impact fees we've already collected. We have about $4.5 million in impact fees.
So, I'm sorry, Steve.
Yeah.
It's a 1 gallon per minute.
Yes.
Is that just the source or all the infrastructure to get it there and the support?
It's all of those elements that allow us to deliver 1 gallon on peak day. All of those elements. Is that?
Yeah,
okay.
What rolls in, all that.
All of that rolls in. And then they also get credits for bonds that are already existing that have paid for.
Pick 1 gallon per minute.
It was just an easy multiple. I'll kind of show how the 1 gallon per minute relates to how much usage we actually see by the typical home.
Didn't Bowen and Collins have a little disclaimer on that? That because Mountain Regional has such a varied user base, it's hard just to use a straight ERC.
Yeah.
So their suggestion was to go with the
gallon per minute. If you're more homogeneous, I said that word wrong, but you guys know what I'm trying to say. Then, you know, if homes are more similar, then you can use more of a ERU or ERC.
You've got 900 square feet, and then you've got 10,000
plus. Yeah. Yes. The Promontory service area is a little bit higher that they would pay that when they come in. They get the same credits because they're also paying water rates, as well as the general service area. But then about $14,000 of that goes back to Promontory. All right, next slide. So to your question, Mike, we calculated the one, but when we looked at what the average, if we use a 3,000 square foot house with 0.2 acres of irrigated space or 8,700 square feet of irrigated area, the expected usage is 0.914 on peak day. So we calculated a cost based on one GPM, but we expect the average user, if we can use that term, to be 0.914 GPM on a peak day. So what that means is that based on what 1 gallon on peak day costs, a factor of 0.914 to it, the general service area will have an impact fee of $16,435. It's currently $8,794. So you can see the growth is really pushing us to do some capital projects such as the treatment plant and other things like that. Promontory is $20,785, currently $15,959. So the impact fee scales up. So a home that's 6,000 square feet will pay a factor based on square footage and irrigated acreage. The nice thing about this new plan is before we only used square footage up to 8,000 square feet. And if a home was over 8,000 square feet, we looked at irrigated acreage. Now we're going to look at irrigated acreage on everything because not all 3,000 or 4,000 square foot homes are created equal. Some have lots of irrigation, some have little. So the ones who are going to push the demand, the infrastructure will pay more in their impact fee.
Is there any difference between like just like native shrubs and trees versus like somebody who's got a lawn, or is it just all irrigated is the same?
We're using, and how Bowen and Collins did it, is it has to follow the new landscape code. So you are allowed some lawn and some irrigated space. So all of that's, as long as they follow the code, we look at that. I guess if somebody has a really big parcel and doesn't do anything in an area, then that wouldn't necessarily be calculated in that calculation. But if it's drip line and lawn, things like that, that's kind of what the code is requiring. So that's what we'll look at.
And we're going to require a more detailed landscaping plan than a generic one that we've used in the past to help calculate that.
For the Promontory impact fee, follows their separate agreement, so it doesn't scale up for their larger homes, but it is calculated into their billing units for their water usage rates. So they pay the higher base or things like that, but that's part of the agreement with Promontory as well, is that they all homes would pay the same impact fee, whether they're 5 or 6,000 square feet or whatever they are. But we still, in the rates, they're treated like everybody else. Is that the last slide?
Hey, do we need to revise the district standards to require the here or the landscape of the plan? Is that in there? Where would we require that?
So
we
require the landscape plan when they're applying for the impact fee, just part of the form. I don't know if it's, we would have to change our standards for it. No.
Double check the standards.
Yeah.
Well, where does that irrigation plan get submitted?
It's when they submit for the impact fee plan analysis.
That includes it.
Yeah.
Thank you. But it's a county requirement.
We are requiring, the landscape plan is part of their submittal for the county, and we're asking for some just detailed numbers on it to be able to calculate the fees.
If there's no other questions,
I have a number of questions. Just out of sheer ignorance, in no particular order, who approves this?
You guys. The impact fee analysis, it's done by professionals who do this all the time. We review it, made sure it was accurate. And basically, we do have to provide information for them to be able to calculate it back.
Do you have any concerns?
No, I think it's all been done well. The one change is developers may be a little shocked on February 1st because the impact fee is about doubling. So along your lines of Joel, of that might slow some development, but at the same time, if people are building up here, a difference of $8,000 or $9,000 in an impact fee is not going to stop them from building.
Can they contest this?
Like anything, they could contest our calculation of the new impact fee. That's why you hire professionals who do this all the time, and they are very conscientious about what they're going to give us is defensible. That was heard several times during the process.
And we'll be opening a public hearing momentarily. So if there's any public, and then there's a 30-day period where they can contest it. But as we were discussing yesterday, this is the new connections, this is what it costs the new connections to come onto the system. So our current customers are not bearing a larger burden.
Some of the numbers that I've seen are incredible. I mean, I think people might bitch a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, are you prepared for that?
As prepared as we can be. I mean, there's lots of explanations to it that we can show in the plan, and they can review the plan. The plan will be posted on our website. It already is, the draft of it, but when it's all put together. But, we are having to make some serious improvements to be able to meet growth.
Yeah.
And so we need that growth to expect to pay those.
Well, I hope this growth slows down. I mean, you shouldn't say that as a realtor, but the other question I have is, I mean, there's a lot that's this big, and there's a lot that's this big. And, I mean, is there a difference?
And that's part of our new one that we really like is, let's say you buy a half acre lot and build a 3,000 square foot home on that.
Yeah.
That's a lot different than putting a 3,000 square foot home on a quarter acre lot.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
Now the half acre lot that would potentially have more irrigated area would pay a higher impact fee than the other one. If they chose to irrigate it. Historically, there wouldn't have been a differentiator there.
Are we doing anything to discourage? That may not be the right term. But are we doing anything to discourage too much landscaping and too much grass and all that kind of good stuff?
The county ordinance that was put into place just over a year ago. And then, you know, Lisa's been actively working on the turf removal that we had 19?
Mm-hmm.
We had 19 participants. Only 4 were able to complete it before the snow flew. So hopefully the other 15 will do that, and hopefully next year we'll be able to see more participation. So yeah, we're actively working on things like that.
Joel, also our water rates help promote conservation because as the water, as you use more, it gets more expensive.
Oh yeah,
exponentially.
Yeah,
so that also helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that the people on Promontory are going to go for this too? Or it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Okay. All right. I may have more questions. I'm just still thinking, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Corey, did you
have a question? In a similar vein, I guess this is kind of like a straight line calculation, right? We have a capital improvement project that requires a budget of 16 million, is that where we're at on the plant?
About 28.
Sorry, 28. There was 60 is a number.
It'll be 60 by the time it's done.
Well, that's where I'm going with all of this. that's where I'm going with all of this. So we can calculate this number based on that $28 million that's required. Do we have any discretion to say these projects notoriously balloon as they move forward, and can we actually make this impact fee larger than the calculations tell us to here, so that we can maybe account for some of that inflation in the actual budget of the project? And I understand that everybody's working very hard to keep that project in
We need to remember that the plant upgrade is not 100% due to growth.
Correct.
There's some resiliency and redundancy and other things that need to be done So only a portion of the newly calculated impact fee is attributable to that. And I also will say that Zions did take a conservative approach as they came up with this number, because you want a number that's defensible. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there was any contemplation of cost overruns or a double project. The good news is, as we're getting down that road, we can revisit this again in a year or 2 years. It's that we don't have to stay with this for 10 years. And it's probably good to revisit it every 5.
Yeah, I guess
to go.
I don't want to find ourselves in a situation where in 2023 we charge, what, $8,800. In 2024, we charge $16,400. And by the time we get to 2030, our impact fee is $80,000.
Well, so conversely, do you want the new growth coming on to pay it, or do you want the existing ratepayers to pay for a resiliency redundancy project, pipe replacement,
and
all of
and
that?
And I guess that's the brunt of my question is, do we have any discretion to pad that and turn this number up a couple notches in order to avoid that kind of ballooning effect later on?
If we did, it does open us up to litigation more, because then developers could challenge it more, that saying you've padded these numbers to try to make a higher impact fee.
Right.
Also, in the plan with Jacobs right now, there are a lot of contingencies and unknowns. If we start to see that, as Andy was saying, coming in over budget, we can redo the impact fee facilities plan. They even suggested that, like, because they put this in place and they give you what it would be for 10 years. They say, but don't let this run for 10 years.
But it's based on 2023 or 2024 dollars.
2023. And so if you start to see movement, then redo it.
Yeah.
It might be good for a while, if as long as everything starts coming in. But if we do see, oh, wow, we go through another inflationary period and now that treatment plan is going to be 40 or 45 million, then we would redo the plan, redo this so that we could collect more.
Yeah, just coming from the perspective of having been involved in water treatment projects for as long as I have never seen an engineer's opinion of cost be correct when it's over.
Yeah.
Well, engineers.
Sorry.
Not to steal Sam's thunder.
Yeah, I was going to say,
not to steal Sam's thunder, but we actually, and I think that that's because they learned their lesson during COVID, but a couple of our projects this year are actually coming in under engineering estimates. So that's nice for us. So
do you think we're going to have any lawsuits, whether it's promontory? I mean, they have pretty deep pockets, a lot of people in promontory.
We already had some discussions with promontory, let them know we were doing this. The one thing that's, I guess, nice for promontory is this isn't a cost that they absorb. It's the people who decide to build in promontory. So it's not backed by promontory's size and legal.
But also gives
the promontory still pays the same fee when somebody closes on a lot. And this is just the impact fee that they pay when they pull a building.
Exactly.
But talk about the reimbursement though.
Yeah. So promontory will pay that. Then we reimburse promontory. The reimbursement to promontory stays the same.
Yeah.
And so, but their customers, instead of paying $15,900, now will be paying $20,000. So the customers actually in promontory building a home will see about a $4,000 difference, but not a material like the cost.
The portion that the district keeps out
is
of that
$4,000.
Yeah. So the district does not keep that $15,000 because we reimburse promontory.
Based
so it's a little misleading there, but.
From short answer to all of this is we don't really have a choice. The numbers are what the numbers are.
Yeah, based on the information that we have.
And if we had a crystal ball, we would have done this 2 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah, because we really should have done it 2 years ago to take advantage of
all the impact fees.
Yeah.
So I thought in the past you explained there's like a standard of practice for how this is performed. Deviate from that, you open yourself up to litigation.
Correct.
Exactly. Yep. We kind of have to follow what the industry standard is for that calculation.
It's a formula. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and with a crystal ball, we would have known we needed the treatment plant. That would have been on our last impact fee facilities plan, and we would have been collecting for it already. But we are where we are. So we start collecting on it now.
And you can't collect too much anyway, because you can't sit on it indefinitely. You've got a window to use those funds, right?
Yeah. So,
These are good questions. This has been a really good discussion. So any other thoughts? We've got a resolution to adopt this, and I will be quiet.
Do we adopt this before the public?
Yeah, we'll do the HEPS, then we'll open the public hearing. So thanks, Chris. The HEPS is our high elevation pumping surcharge. So we have areas in the district that are higher, that are not at our base level we've established. So those areas pay an additional charge to cover the power costs that they incur or cause the district to incur. So the goal is to cover our power costs. These, again, were last updated in 2019. So we hired Boland Collins to do the study this year to help us understand if we're recovering enough, too much, how are we doing. Our existing rates have 9 different areas. This one also has 9 areas, but there are some modifications to the areas. Colony before was all one rate, but there's definitely some differentiators in there of having to have more pumps to get it to the very highest areas. So we did break that into 2 rates now. So there's kind of a lower colony that they'll pay a lower rate. A higher colony will pay what it really costs to get to the higher part of the colony. The North Ridge, we had broken down probably too much. We had 4 areas before, and we've realized basically there are 2. That if you, the cost to get it to the lower 2 sections of Glenwild and Red Hawk is 1, and the cost to get it to Preserve and Stagecoach can really be grouped together. So those are down 1. We also created a new White Pine area, and that's over there because of the old ranch booster station has to pump that up to a tank to feed back down to that area now. And that was not captured in our last one. And so that's in there now. It's not very high, but it will put a charge on the people who are reliant on that booster, getting it up to a tank and then feed back down into, for example, Silver Springs. Part of that, if I'm not mistaken, Sam, is because since we've lost the Spring Creek as a source, we can't, that doesn't just naturally flow that we can use that water. So now we have to do more pumping in that side of the district.
Yeah, that was really nice summary, Steve. Yes, folks are more reliant on Old Ranch boosting the water, and they're proportionally charged for, you know, volumetrically what they use coming out of that pump station and the associated electrical costs.
So at the top of this,
Silver Springs.
So what? Yeah, where does Silver Springs
come to me and say, "How come we're high elevation?"
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you are higher than basically the Atkinson zone. You're higher than we are right here now because we have to pump it over through Old Ranch and up to that first tank.
So then what changed is, well, we lost the
Silver Springs.
Spring Creek, which had.
Was there a tank though that went into, or did it just go right into the?
It floated gravity into the spring tank, which serves Silver Springs and determines the HGL for that zone, the pressure
basin. Are we still using the spring tank?
Yeah, but water is introduced to the spring tank via the Old Ranch booster pump station to a greater degree now.
Through a PRV instead of just gravity. So we're burning up energy to the PRV because we lost the spring.
Yep.
If you will notice, the White Pine is the smallest charge. It's 16 cents per 1,000 because it is a minimal pump, but there is a cost there. So the at the top are the rates that we currently charge. The bottom is the rates that we would be asking for approval tonight. You see the colony lower now is lower than the colony. Most of them vary just by a matter of cents or percentage. There wasn't a lot of change. Summit Park Timberline goes up 8 cents. No, yeah. No,
3 cents.
3 cents, just from 78 to 81. Probably the next slide helps explain this too. So in 2022, our power charges were $613,000. Give or take a thousand, whatever. Cost recovered from our high elevation pumping surcharges was $256,300. We have special contracts with Promontory and Park City for the raw water that's brought up from Lost Canyon. We recovered about almost $130,000 in power charges through those contracts. Then the cost recovered in our normal usage rates was about $228,000, kind of built in everybody's base and water rates. The new proposed rates, giving the usage in 2022, would have generated $256,400. So basically what it told us is we're recovering the right amount of money. What it's done is just said, probably tweak it a little bit. You should recover a little bit more here, a little less here, but overall you're recovering about the right amount. The nice thing about this is it's scalable. So if our power charges go up to 800,000, the high elevation pumping surcharges will also move. Since it's not a static, it moves with usage. But that's kind of just a snapshot of what 2022, which was very, hey, we kind of knew what we were doing historically, and this has just helped us tweak it and make it a little more refined. That slide understood?
I have a question. If we look in the future, obviously, prices are going to go up.
Yeah.
Have you anticipated anything in the future?
We know things are going to change, but that's why we look at our rates every year, and kind of like our rate model that we have that we look at every year and see. We now kind of have a good framework for this model too, so we will look at this every year and make sure we're still keeping up with any changes that may need to be made.
So we'll look at it every year.
Yeah.
So people aren't surprised.
Yeah.
Well, and this won't surprise that one of the two.
I'm sorry.
They'll either be surprised or have a heart attack or both.
Or some might be happy because a few of them actually dropped if they lived in the right areas where there weren't as many costs. So. All right. Is that the last slide?
It is.
Okay. So if there aren't any other questions, go ahead, Ian.
Can we flip to the map?
You bet.
On the next deck, I think.
So, did I look at those numbers right? That some people are paying more high elevation surcharge than Summit Park?
No, they are paying less.
What was Sun Peak's charge?
46
cents. 46
cents. Historically, they were, but it was kind of a little different area.
Yeah, Summit Park is 81.
Okay.
And Sun Peak is 46.
Sorry, I looked at that wrong. Got it.
Okay. What was Sun Peak paying in the past?
It was like $1.21.
Something?
I believe
well,
so.
But it was just the upper part. It wasn't.
Oh. So I was looking at that number that Sun Peak used to be more than Summit Park.
Yes. So it makes sense. Because it was going all the way to the Olympic tank.
Okay.
But now the area expanded. The area expanded and you've now diluted. So by all the users in Silver Springs.
So you've diluted Sun Peak, but the people in Silver Springs, it's going to be a
hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still less than Summit Peak. Okay. I think I understand it now. I like the idea of lumping some of these together and dividing out. I guess I didn't. It does seem to me like there's a huge elevation difference, though, in Sun Peak to Silver Springs.
Okay.
I think there could be questions on that. And there's a huge difference in elevation. It seems like driving way up into Sun Peak and the Olympic tank and all that area.
But this meadow tank is up a ways. That's what
yeah.
it's
that feeds.
And then it comes down Silver Springs. PRV, yeah.
Another thing that I think is improvement in this method is it looks at it ties the actual asset to the group. Like, is this pressure zone or this neighborhood relying on Old Ranch booster pump station? And you take the energy costs associated with that asset and split it up among the group.
So even though there's an elevation difference with the homes, the assets that's serving them is, I get it.
For example, the top of Sun Peak, we have an undersized tank and a very large tank at the top. So the entire neighborhood is reliant on pumping water to the top of the neighborhood from a fire and emergency storage perspective.
Yeah.
So again, from an asset, taking a step back and look at what they really rely on for their levels of service, that's what drives the costs that go into the pumping surcharge.
That makes sense.
Did you talk to the fire department or anybody else or any input whatsoever?
Bowen Collins did speak to Park City Fire.
Okay.
Yeah, part of the master planning effort too. We had a lot of discussions with those folks, determined the biggest fire hazard in every tank zone, and worked back from them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get an earful from my neighbors, I think, because they're going to say, well, what changed? We didn't do anything. How come?
Source is a big one in your.
We lost our source.
Mm-hmm. Lost source and the tank that serves you.
I mean, we
had to get a higher tank.
Yep. Spring was the third best source in the district, probably, and most energy efficient.
Yeah, with no energy cost.
It's a big damage.
And the cost to put a treatment plant over there, $20+ million.
And
that's a source that we own, you know, 49-51 or whatever the split is. And we'd have to have a partner willing to participate in that.
Like I said, appreciate the discussion, honestly.
Excellent job predicting
pursuing
that total power costs and nailing that on the nose.
Well, that was more inherited. I won't take too much credit. Doug, who many of you knew, was a wizard and kind of pulled that together, and we've been living off of that for a while. But it was very reaffirming, let's say.
I mean, there's some pointy-headed people in a room giving opinions.
And so the part of the problem, too, is when all of that, the Canyons Golf Course and everything was developed, there was no source protection plan that was approved in the county. That didn't get approved until 2019?
Somewhere around
18, 19? And so that was kind of the, you know, there was no teeth in anything. And the developers were able to do what they wanted to do. And my guess is the golf course and some of that development up there has changed the topography enough to create higher TDS. The state says you can't use that anymore without treatment. And because we're the minority owner or entitled user of that, we've been trying to get the majority owner to do something, and they don't have the resources.
What are they doing with it right now?
Nothing. It's disconnected from both sides.
Aren't they hurting a little bit?
A little bit.
An opportunity there?
Yeah, I mean,
take it off their hands?
Possibly. And we would just have to decide, you know, and kind of the other gray area up there, too, is the land is owned by the HOA. So we would have to negotiate with the HOA and probably work through.
It's such a varying flow, too. It's not a steady flow.
Is that exact location in district?
In district? Is it in Spring?
Not an hour. Is it? Yeah, I guess it is.
Right. It's totally in our
case. Yeah, I guess it is 100%.
Okay.
I'm trying to think where. This is by the Spring tank.
Okay.
Would it be worth having Dave look into our options?
We can do that. The interference cases are done through the state engineer. And we have to look at going out and getting an opinion from a water attorney. But those were hard cases to prove. Unfortunately,
you usually wind up with two expert witnesses on the stand, and they both can say the exact opposite.
Yeah.
With that, do we want to open it up to public discussion, or do we have any public?
There is no public input.
Okay. Well, do we have anyone willing to make a motion to approve the impact fee analysis and the high elevation pumping surcharge?
So moved. Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Come on, Mike. You were unanimous the whole time that you were in the chair. Now you're going to do me again.
I don't like the high elevation charging decisions. I don't think that's it's their responsibility. But it'll still pass, right?
It'll still pass.
But I don't think it's fair to.
Because of the loss of source.
Yeah.
Which gets back to the point of, is this a big enough issue where maybe we should pursue looking at some other options?
Yeah. Doesn't seem right.
But yeah. That Silver Strings has to bear the brunt for somebody else that essentially, yeah, raised the TDS and created surface connection.
Lost our source.
Yep.
I'm voting for my neighborhood.
Right on.
Okay.
Have we talked to the Kings at all about it? She's in there.
Dan. Dr. Laurel.
Might as well bring it up. But it's at least something to say, hey, we lost the source. And we think that it's as a result of what's happened on the golf course. And see what they say.
Yeah, we're impacting.
Now it's impacting customers. Directly impacted, yeah. Silver Springs. They have a high elevation fee that they didn't have before, and it's this many dollars per year on average. And yeah, throw some numbers at them.
Yeah, I'll get
it. If they sweat a little.
I mean, it's like a $20 million ballpark. Put a treatment plant over there. We can work out land.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even own the land, but yeah, something like that.
Can the ground conditions be improved to restore the previous condition, or is that out of the picture at this point?
No, it's a risk, though. Redeveloping springs can go either way. There's not a lot of assurances going into it. I guess my experience with the state, when folks would, it would often shoot people in the foot putting a big investment into trying to redevelop a spring instead of coming up with an alternative solution.
Usually redevelop if it's an issue at the spring itself, if you had a bacterial bloom or something occur. This has more of a signature of, I think, infiltration and issue upgrading. So it's a district or source area issue.
Yeah, and it's not to your point, there's not a easy fix to like the spring collection area that we could implement. It's not.
We can't undo the excavations that have occurred up gradient and the changes in the water balance maybe you could change the water balance with water, but still pretty hard to undo the development that's been done in the source area for the spring. So kind of stuck with what we got, and treatment's probably going to be where we go.
Yeah. I mean, it's determined by the state that we haven't treated like any other surface water source. And honestly, it behaves a lot like a surface water source would, more so than any of our other wells, for example. So yeah, we have to, and it'd be in the best interest to treat the water. And I think at some point it probably does make sense. I mean, 20, 30 years from now, we're really approaching build out and squeezing every last drop out of the basin to get there. Then I think dollars and cents wise, I mean, I don't think we can leave anything on the tree, probably, but with the projections we have. But at this point, we're kind of letting sleeping dogs lie.
Are we prepared for any lawsuits? I mean, if somebody challenges this, it could cost us a lot of money. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Challenging what?
The increase.
Generally speaking, nobody wins a fee lawsuit against the governmental entity.
Okay. It feels like we've done it the right way with qualified people, and we as far as being prepared.
It's defensible.
Yeah.
And they had their chance tonight for public input. And they have a 30-day.
Yeah, but just they're people. I mean, yeah. No, I mean, like the conversation we had with the the customer up in Summit Park. I just think there's an education, and I sent an email to everyone letting her, you know, that I told her I will give you a tour of the system, explain it. To go back to the Silver Springs area, I mean, that we're just trying to pass on the actual cost of delivering water so other customers don't have to subsidize. And I know you might feel a pinch now, but if that area goes away, that means everyone else in the district then has to pay that additional cost. I don't know what it is neighborhood by neighborhood. You know, it's $256,000 divided by our entire customer base. But that's, we're just trying to get people to pay the actual, there's a little O&M in that.
Yeah.
So just how to operate the system in that area. And it could be that, you know, if another source goes down, then we have to relook at how water gets delivered in other areas. But that's, you know, we're trying to do upgrades, Knoll Branch Road, and do other things in the future to help. Yeah, no one likes to pay more, but that's why. Not that makes you feel any better.
Are we communicating enough to the people that are impacted?
Now that it's approved, we will send this out in our next bill, what the new rates will be. These are posted on our website. And so that's kind of, we'll put definitely a message in the bill at the end of December, which then still they'll have time to respond and ask, because these rates can't go effective until February 1st now because of the timing.
Just the impact fee and the high elevation.
The high elevation.
The rate increase that's projected that was approved last time will go into effect January
1st. But the high elevation and the impact fees, the ones being approved or the ones that were approved tonight, don't go into effect till February 1st. And there is still, we'll notice them, have them direct them to the website to see what the new rates are.
I'm just trying to avoid, maybe they should be concerned, but I'm just trying to avoid problems in the future.
No.
I mean, Dave knows better than anybody. Anybody can sue anybody for whatever reason. Doesn't mean they're right or wrong, but I don't think we're the last of this. I really, really don't. And I want us to be prepared for this. I mean, I think we're going to get a rush of shit. If I could use the term, I'm sorry. But, I mean, almost anymore.
All right. So with that, we are 4-4 and 1 against on the high elevation pumping charge and the impact fee analysis. Mm-hmm.
I guess we could...
Do we have to note that it's...
There are two different resolutions, so it can be one voted on and the other one voted on?
The impact fee needs to be passed by the resolution. Isn't there a resolution in the packet?
There's a resolution for the high elevation. You still need to approve the impact fee as to form. That's what I was talking to Lisa about as she was leaving.
All right, so the resolution that they're passing is this one for...
This is the high elevation that they're passing. The impact fee one has been emailed to you, Dave.
And I approved that as to form, but that has to be, that resolution has to be approved by this body.
Okay.
So, okay. And I was guessing that consideration approval of the impact fee rates was that approval, and then...
Are
the high elevation pumping surcharge rates are the other resolution.
Yes, there are two resolutions.
So I would take the two resolutions separately and VEDA vote on the impact fee resolution first and then vote on the high elevation pumping surcharge rate resolution second.
Procedurally, do we need the impact fee resolution formally written up in the packet to vote on it? Or can we just vote on it as is written right there? Because we have the formal resolution for the high elevation in the packet, but we didn't have one for the impact fee in the packet. Unless I missed it.
mean, technically speaking, you put the approval of the impact fee on your agenda.
Okay.
It would have been nicer to have it in the packet too, but technically this complies with it, with the statute.
Okay.
Okay.
So, back to you, maybe, are you comfortable with this outcome? If it looks like Joel's saying we get some challenges.
Yeah, I mean, we'll know in the next 30 days if there are any protests. And if somebody protests something that, you know, brings up something we haven't thought about, we have the ability to come back to this body.
Or just the procedure that it wasn't in the packet. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. It would be nice if, I mean, you basically talked about it because this presentation was in the packet, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the backup for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's enough specificity that it was in the packet. Like I said, it's just that the resolution itself wasn't in the packet. I think that's okay because the impact fee resolution is the same form resolution that we've crafted before, just updated to this. So.
And they were both noticed.
Yeah.
So
I think you're safe to approve both of them. I'd approve the impact fee one first, then the high elevation one.
Okay. Do we have a motion, on the impact fee analysis?
It is impact fee rates.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a motion on the impact fee rates?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We've got one that's unanimous. And then do we have a motion for the high elevation pumping surcharge rate?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
Yes. Okay. So four in favor and Mike is opposed. So both pass.
There's some homework.
Yeah, I think that goes to, you know, the flyer in the bill of how come.
Yeah. Maybe we can spell that out a little bit more. Yeah. In our message or a flyer or a post on the webpage. We'll get together with Anna and Lisa. And
a little brochure, show where the water's coming from, in fact, the source was lost.
We've prepared to possibly meet if there's a problem.
Sure.
Okay.
I
don't think we frizzle up to this.
Where does that water go now that's not being
put in the end of the lakes over in North Shore and
down past your office?
Or could they sell it back to the golf course as raw water?
There was a time where the canyons was looking at snowmaking water.
Yeah.
I mean that. That might be one thing if they wanted to do to.
They just never wanted to put money in for a second, because they're on the culinary water system. They'd have to put in a separate snowmaking system.
Yeah. The current reservoir capacity is pretty low. They'd have to build some new infrastructure if they want to hold it. Yeah. Lots of work.
All right, moving on. Does anyone have any changes to the November 30th meeting minutes? Do we have a motion to approve the meeting minutes from November 30th?
I make a motion that we approve the meeting minutes for November.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. And then we're on to Sam.
All right. So went through and tried to get some good photos and reflected on the projects for the past year.
A+ on photos.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Okay. And actually enjoyed doing it. Started a little earlier than normal, so that helped the stress level. I wasn't so rushed. And Steve was a huge help getting me updated budget numbers. Just as a heads up, did my best to project what the budgets are going to end up being, but we only have through the October close, I guess.
Yeah. We've got November bills, but this was numbers through October's close.
But for the critical capital projects, we know where those budgets are coming in at. So the projected numbers included in the report should be pretty good. So on the tier one projects, you know, our big publicly bid projects, generally defined as 5% of the annual operating budget of the district or greater. Summit Park Tank 1, we talked about a lot over the years. We've reached final completion, got most of the chlorination system up and running. Right, Chris?
Yep, it's going.
Yeah, Chris kind of pulled out the stops at the end to get all the controls and wiring done, which was a big effort. The contractor is excellent to work with, FX Construction, and I think it's easy to forget it's a really challenging site and design, and they did a really nice job.
And we hadn't used them before, right?
We have never used them before. Okay. They're relatively new-ish to the concrete tank market. It's kind of a niche deal, obviously. Yeah. But no, they've done really well.
Do you have an operating permit?
We have an issued in hand operating permit from the Division of Drink Water for the tank and the chlorination system. Yep. In hand. So yeah, it's fairing into the system, active, feeding the lower part of Summit Park. I'm sure Brian's sleeping a little better.
The game changer now, the volume of this tank is huge.
Yeah.
Compared to what it used to be.
And with the latest master plan work, the size of the tank should get us through our build-up projections. So hopefully this is a very long-term solution to the biggest tank zone and service area in Summit Park.
Well, the old tank is kind of lost, you know, end of its life too, so.
Yeah, totally.
It looks great.
Yeah, it doesn't stick out too much.
Yeah.
Blends in a little bit. We didn't go over the top with architecture.
Neighbors are happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, the neighbors are pretty good to work with as well. And I think we've kept everyone as happy as possible. We had some, on our two big capital projects, we had some internal contingency figures, which was actually nice to work with. And some of those contingency funds absorb costs, like all the electrical work we did over the past year. Like in the photo, you can see that structural power pole. We work with Rocky Mountain in-house and got that installed. And getting the site all prepped for the tank. And looks like we're going to come under budget. This is the most significant one by a couple $100,000 on the tank. So that's a good place to be.
We also took down the Timberline tank.
Yeah, that also includes a change order to demolish an abandoned tank in Timberline, which is a nice thing to take care of as well.
What are we going to do with the savings? Anything?
What are we going to do with the saving? I guess Steve gets to decide what we're going to do with the roll.
They say rolled into our capital budget, so they would help offset any costs of future capital projects.
Stays with that budget.
Yeah.
So
it's timber.
Right below Summit Park.
Kind of tucked in next to Summit Park.
Like before you get to Burgosa.
Wyland
or that Wyland school.
Well,
there's Wyland. First up from there is Discovery, that newest one, kind of like looking things that they put in, and then it's Timberline and some.
And they have their own storage still, but water still needs to get pumped to Summit Park Tank 1 and then fed back into the Timberline tank. So they're completely reliant on the Summit Park system.
They're on ERB.
Yeah, totally.
They are.
They use the energy.
I hadn't thought of this before, but. Main breaks in Timberline.
It's a much newer system.
Right? Yeah, and they got plastic pipe that's a little more resilient, so they don't have too many over there.
They don't pave roads, and so in the winter it'll be a nightmare.
We had a good one last summer.
Easier to dig, harder to patch.
Yeah.
It's for bad road and milk.
Got it.
We do them once in a while, but not very often.
Okay. Sorry, off topic.
Very good. So another big project was our water line up in the Woodland area in Summit Park. That one luckily came in a little under budget too. I think we'll be right around $100,000 under budget on that project. We got final completion in hand, and final pay request should get submitted this month. So
do you think we could split that money?
Oh, absolutely. So, okay. So it's a collaborative project with Snyderville Basin and the county.
Oh, great, great.
The roadway
great.
Costs are split a third across all parties, and then mobilization and other administrative costs are split between the Sewer District and Mountain Regional on a percentage based on their scope in an overly complicated agreement, which is fine. This was a really challenging project. It's nice to be on the other side. It was really, it had a big impact on Summit Park residents, which, you know, definitely thought about that a lot over the summer. Hope long-term that the improvements will be worthwhile for that short-term pain.
What will people talk about on Nextdoor?
I
know.
But it was a good learning process. You know, the intent of the project was to get that collaborative effort back together between the three agencies. And looking back, I think it's a good idea when it's a roadway-driven project that the utilities can hop on. And I think there's room for that in the future. But I think a utility-driven project that turns into a roadway design and construction project on the fly is not a good project for the district to manage. And we will avoid doing so in the future. I think.
Good lesson.
Yeah. I was in the right place. Just, I don't think it's a good structure for us. But it'll be a big improvement at Summit Park. I mean, Brian had it flagged as maybe one of our biggest areas in need following the first six phases of the Summit Park project. The isolation valves will be super helpful to make smaller kills if we have any issues in the future. And there's undersized water line and, of course, a pretty nasty leak history all along there. The Tier 2 project, these are both betterments with Promontory. We're not quite wrapped up on either one of these. The first project's a little easier story to tell. The water line and transmission lines are in the ground as part of the subdivision, but the construction, the vertical construction, the control valve building is lagging behind. So we're doing everything we can on our end to kind of light the fire with Promontory and get that wrapped up.
So when you say that to facilitate timely construction, you're saying that they can't pull any permits for, say, chills until we get this sorted out, or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we kind of split the subdivision in half, essentially, more or less. So anything that's relying on this PRV building for fire flow, obviously, we're saying, hey, get this wrapped up. We're not taking and it's not accepting impact fee. You're not doing a building permit. Mm-hmm. Until we feel good about the building, we get into conditional acceptance, get into our warranty period. Huh. It's a bit of a compromise. So everything upstream on the high pressure of the PRV building, we have accepted some impact fees, and most critically, the new clubhouse for the short courses on that side of the system. So that's maybe the biggest priority for Promontory Homes right now. And they're a good partner to work with, at least since I've been here at the district. So we wanted to work with them on that. So that's kind of the compromise we came up with.
Yeah.
So that'll roll into 2024. And then the Browns Canyon Connection Betterment is definitely going to roll into 2024 and beyond. Promontory is essentially ripping up their master plan for the southern end of the development as a result of an access issue from Browns Canyon Road. So we've still got a budget number in there, but it's not in touch with, we don't have a design in hand or a new proposal. So we're doing the best we can with that for now. And I think if, you know, things get pushed another year without any clarity, maybe we don't even carry a budget number moving forward.
Yeah, then we could reallocate that money towards another capital project until it became viable again, and then we put it back in the budget. Yeah.
But just as a reminder, Promontory, what's that, Dave?
We haven't resolved the issue with that access.
That's a good summary. I agree.
The county wants them to put in an expanded turn lane, which includes additional property. They don't necessarily want to do that. That's kind of...
Yeah, because they just own basically the sliver, right? That takes it out to the...
They have an alternative in mind at this point.
They do it. It looks pretty nasty. I mean, it's pretty wild egress, like a pretty wild roadway project, this other proposal they have. But they weren't able to negotiate with the landowner to obtain a snow removal, snow storage easement.
Okay.
So they're kind of getting their feet held to the fire by a private party. So they're going to potentially go a different direction. So that's that story. So now on our internal projects, you know, these are not bid. We don't have a contractor managing these efforts. These are a lot of fun to do in-house, and couldn't do it without Brian's group. You know, our ops folks are really talented. And I think you see this on the spine booster pump station upgrade project. So just looking at these photos at the bottom, just a little bit more. You can see that building got expanded, built out. That was done in-house by Rick and the team. We did a structural retrofit to get all the electrical equipment above ground, again, kind of managing in-house. And then Chris, of course, did his thing to get all the new controls and electrical equipment delivered and installed on those new structural upgrades. And I think it turned out pretty nicely. I mean, everything down, even that concrete pad in front of the building, that's a regional project.
And the controls were underground before.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so great.
So that's a continuation of like what we did at Kilby.
Yeah.
Not only upgrading them, but yeah, getting them out of a confined space, getting them out of a vault.
Where is Spine?
It's right at the, I don't know if familiar with Promontory, but it's probably like a third of the way up the hill in Promontory. So it used to be the main supply of water to Promontory prior to the completion of the treatment plant. So water would be boosted from Bison Bluffs up to the Signal Hill tank. So it was very much a needed booster pump station. Now the pumps are essentially on standby emergency use, and it functions as a control valve to get water from the plant to the rest of the system and Silver Springs.
Through a reducing valve?
Flow control valve.
Flow control.
Yeah. We came in a little bit over budget on this one, but the budget projection was a lot better on Kilby, if you folks remember that. We missed the budget on Kilby by a fair bit. And this one got tuned in a little bit better based on that experience.
Do you have a list of other underground infrastructure you want to get up above? Stuff like a checklist you're moving through?
Yeah, in my head, maybe. I don't know if we wrote one down.
As long as you thought about it.
They get harder from here.
Yeah, we took the low-hanging fruit.
The worst ones are
We don't have a lot of below-ground booster stations. So.
Silver Springs booster pump station. Again, this, you can kind of see this new pump at the bottom. Things are getting pretty complicated in here with the mechanical design, but everything in the foreground is new, custom fabbed on-site mechanical piping to make that new pump work. And should hopefully allow us to shift our water resources around a little bit better and make use of those new wells. Well, they're not new, but reactivating these wells in the Sun Peak area that we've put some resources into the past couple of years. We got pretty good pricing. I know folks were concerned we were moving to a new fabricator, but looking at the latest closed numbers, I think things turned out pretty well. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just kind of a testament to our staff and ops folks on these internal projects why these budget numbers are so low. And I guess one thing to add on that is I don't have any labor from the district including these budget numbers, whereas Steve, when you would go tie those and depreciate them in an asset, is a different story.
We always capitalize a portion of our labor every year and then allocate it as we finalize the assets, how much time was spent on each one. But it's in the budget, just in a different area.
And then it should be the last project is Colony Airbrake Tank Upgrade. It's kind of a misleading name because we're not upgrading a tank. We're essentially removing it from the system. So this is a tank that used to function in essence as an air brake or a pressure brake, a pressure reducing station. And the ops folks, you know, on paper, Brian always looks good on paper. A paper looked like a pretty simple excavation and fix to some exterior piping to make this work to change this existing configuration into a more traditional control valve, pressure reducing valve station like we have everywhere else in the district. But when you actually get out there, the operations folks were concerned it was going to be a nasty dig. So an idea that, you know, we came up with that on site that I thought was really nice is to do the mechanical modifications and not make an excavation, but utilize the tank to do those and kind of do it in a safe way and not kind of putting a big nasty hole to, next to a giant colony mansion, et cetera, et cetera. So, so far so good with the new control valves. Things are working well. There's still a ton of pressure on this station, so it's still going to be it's a demanding application for the control valves, I guess you could say. But
so does the water come in through the duct of the black pipe and it comes out the blue?
Yeah. So
is that all submerged?
So this is just the modifications made on the how the water enters the pressure reducing valve. So I don't have a photo of the actual pressure reducing valve station in here. I should have. But that last valve, the blue one, that's a 4-inch blow off. So that'll dump, you know, if we have a.
It's just a pressure relief valve.
Yeah, it's just a relief valve.
So it's plumbed out the tank drain.
Yeah, this is still in progress, but.
Okay. Is the tank all underground or is it partially above?
No, it's all underground.
It's small. It's only a 10,000 gallon tank. It's 10 feet deep.
Yeah. But yeah, on the other side of that wall in the PRV station, there's a duty and a fire flow pressure reducing valve now that are still up and they're doing the work. We also have a flow meter in there that's still live, which is a nice kind of added measure of security for something that has so much pressure on it.
So is this inside the tank?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the floor of that 10,000 gallon tank. Is there
full water?
No, we don't need the tank anymore. Okay. We're abandoning the tank. Because it's unnecessary and possible.
It's
and now we change it to match kind of what we have everywhere else in the system to a pressure reducing valve.
Yeah.
The valves that this thing replaced were very problematic. They were
wasn't designed right.
Yeah,
maybe more elevation on the work.
It was by the developer. It wasn't by
the altitude valves that were in there. They just didn't work.
It just wasn't enough. Differential.
Yeah, pressure differential.
Oh, I'm sorry. So some people too, this is also going to continue into 2024. So I'll keep giving updates on next year's quarterly updates and packets and everything. But we're pretty close. We got power to the site, pumps in the well, rehabilitation took place. We got source chems, right? So we're working through the state to get it reactivated. And I guess a big push is just SCADA electrical stuff.
Hopefully that'll all be installed. May not be operation, but should be installed before the end of the year.
Yeah, we can work on it through the winter.
What was the capacity on that well?
What do you think, Brian?
There used to be like a 60-gallon well.
Okay.
But we expect to get that.
50 or 60.
Hopefully we'll get more.
Oh, yeah, or more. Okay.
Yeah.
So does it pump to the meadow tank?
This is an interesting one. This one pumps downhill into the spring tank. So from an energy, well, from an energy efficiency standpoint, I would guess it's one of the worst sources in the district on dollars per 1,000 gallon pump. But I haven't done the math because we've never had it. So that's a
plastic.
Excuse me. But yeah, we talk about it actually potentially rerouting the transmission line on this tank. So it actually pumped to the Bear Hollow tank. So halfway up some peak instead of pumping downhill into the spring tank. That's something we could still do in the future, but we elected not to do it for this project. I think that kind of wraps it up. Kind of talked through all the lessons learned piece already. Budgets look pretty good. Sun Park Woodland Project. We're going to try not manage any more roadway projects on the fly. And then the last piece is this year's kind of the first year we kind of had this new annual schedule or framework in place where we're kind of trying to build everything around the optimal bidding time, end of October, early November. And I think it's been successful. I mean, when these projects hit the street, it was the worst bidding market I've ever seen. And we came to you guys, you know, with asking for some pretty significant increases in budget. But if we weren't that far ahead in the game, you know, we'd already have a finalized budget and we'd have those numbers the following year, which would be an even worse position. So obviously that's not great, but I think the framework, the actual schedule has been an improvement and something I want to keep going. So we'll continue working back from that that bidding window to make sure we have our designs in place to hit that and get a good contractor.
Yes.
Get good bids.
We didn't bid anything this fall.
No. Yeah. And then we'll talk about next year's projects, either January or February. And we don't have a bid project, but we have probably the biggest internal project we've had since I've been here with the district. So that'll be exciting to work through. It's probably about $1 million project, except I don't think we'll be getting outside support on that one. So it'll be a good challenge. So that wraps it up.
Well done.
Yeah. Thank great you. Work. Okay. We are going to see a demo of the district's new website.
So moving forward, so you guys can still keep the Chromebooks. Everything will be the same, except instead of getting links to the G Drive, we now have a portal on our new website that'll be live next Friday. So you guys will be getting emails from, I think they come from Streamline is who you'll get the email from to sign up for this new website. So what we're going to do is it'll be just a board portal. So the website is still going to be mtregional.org. So just you'll go to the web address. You'll scroll down to the very bottom of the page, and down here in this lower right-hand corner, there's an employee portal, there's a board portal, and so obviously for you guys it'll be the board. You'll click on the board portal, and you get taken to an internal. It's an intranet, so it's just stuff you guys get to. Okay. Trying to keep this as simple as possible, and you know any feedback you guys have, you know we'll take constructive criticism here. Meeting documents. So I set this up for today's meeting so you could see what it's going to look like. You click on the meeting. The link is right here to get to so for Joel, when you're gone next month, you won't have to ask where the link is because it's right here. You can just click it directly from the screen and away you go. So that'll take you right to the Zoom meeting. And then each of these is all the documents you guys saw tonight. So instead of having to go through the drive and worry about having shared folders and all that stuff, every meeting will be on here. And it's just going to be down the list, you know, chronologically as we have them. All the previous meetings will just be below that.
Can you still click through?
That's my question. Thank you.
No, that's the one downside is you won't be able to click through each document. It'll open in a new tab. That's the one downside.
You can't just go side to side.
Nope. On here, on the calendar page, just a simple list of all that. This is all the 2024 dates that I've thrown in here, just to give you guys what they are. Training is empty right now, but again, it'll be more files. It'll be things like Dave's Special Service District training stuff will be in here. And then the directory is just simply all the members of the board with terms and so forth listed on here. The one thing I was going to ask you guys, is there any benefit to putting your phone numbers on here so that you guys can, if you need to contact other board members and you don't have the phone number handy, would that be a benefit or not?
I don't mind if my phone number.
Yeah, we've already shared them on text change before, so I'm fine with it as long as it's not a.
Yeah, this is not visible by anybody else. This is simply between, a few of the admin staff and you guys. That's all who would see it. And my thought was with a new board member, it might be handy, to have that information in one spot for them. Okay. All right. And we'll do that. Oh, there's not?
Are the terms 4 years?
Well, we actually had that discussion with the
county. I thought Joel and Ian's terms were expiring, but they don't expire for another year.
Another 3 years? I thought someone.
They're four years.
That's my error on the top.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, 4 years.
Yeah.
For a maximum of 3 terms.
There's a max?
Yeah.
12 years.
I didn't realize that.
Huh. After 12 years, you have to start working for the district.
For free.
It's the same on all the county special service districts.
Okay. Oh, is that why Brett finally dropped off? I was wondering why he didn't keep going.
Can you go off and then come back on after a period?
You can, and there are some that have, like on the Planning Commission and others, where, you know, they term out, and then in a year or two, they apply to come back on.
I know that might fit into your succession a little bit. I don't know.
Okay. And yeah, if there's anything else you guys want to see on here, just let me know. We can figure out a way to add whatever it is you want.
You expire in 26? The end of 26. I thought you just re-upped.
Yeah, I did too.
I did.
So technically his term expired at December of
22.
Yeah.
So then he'll go through the end of
it's the end of 26.
End of 26.
Wow. Time flies.
And feel free to, like I said, you'll get an email to sign up with the password for these.
Okay. So it's not going to be one of those fake emails that you send out to the employee?
Nope.
Like asking for personal information?
I only fill for that.
Your password must be your social security number.
It's crystal back. You got two?
Even right there, the board members can click right there too, right? On the right hand side.
I think that just tells who our board members are.
Yeah, this is just the governance and this part.
No, to the right.
I know, it's the same
thing. Okay, got it.
Did you resolve the personnel committee question we had last time?
Well, we wouldn't have their phone numbers on this.
No, it might.
Just home address.
So on this, you have.
That's all we have.
You have your. organizational chart on this as well?
On our website, we do. On the public website, we do.
Okay.
Is that required?
No.
Okay.
But it's nice to have.
This is the public website.
This is the portal. Oh, that's the public
website. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
the other thing, or the other ones.
The gray is yours.
It would be a portal that we signed up.
Right. It's a board portal.
Yep. But what's your question then?
I don't have one.
So since there are who's the sixth board member that's skipping?
That's Andy.
That's Andy.
Yeah.
Yes, I was skinnier then.
All right. Do we have any other questions on the website? Sure. Otherwise, do we have to go into executive session? We do. Okay.
So 20 minutes.
Oh, boy. All right. Do we have a motion to go into executive session?
Motion to enter executive session to talk about the topic, personnel.
Okay.
Well, there's a resolution.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Okay. And then do we need to make a motion?
Yes,
number nine.
Okay, so.
Did you want to give some statements first?
We could. And then, you know what? That's what we talked about in executive session with Joel and I did Andy's annual review. And the board's really happy with the performance. We talked about how much was accomplished in 23. And it was a really good year. There's a lot of good stuff on that list. And we talked about what's coming up, and we set three kind of big goals for 24. Or do we want to? We can air them out right now to update the strategic plan, come up with a succession plan, and some more public communication involved. Right? That's kind of what. To be expected, and the board's very satisfied with your performance, and what came out was in our meeting was that, and you feel supported by the board, and so I think that's the parties are in agreement there, and we talked about the merit. I guess the COLA is automatic. And so do we need to vote on?
Yep, someone needs to make a motion
with
on the
percentage.
With the percentage of it.
Okay, so I move that we approve a merit increase for our general manager of 3%.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's Thank unanimous. You. Yeah. Okay, and with that, we are on to number 10. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
At 7:52.